Okay, today is December 21st, the 3rd of Tevet, and we are maybe going to finish this parak of Shaul and the Necromancer, conjuring up Shmuel. So today I said we were going to focus on, so last week we focused on why he might have done it, and this week we're going to focus on what actually happened. Was it actual magic necromancy, or was there something else going on? And there's a lot of different opinions. Okay, so I think it's good to review the psukim, because they're going to come out. And so let's review, starting from Tetzayin. This is the beginning of the little paragraph going to the end of the parak. Vayomer Shmuel v'lama tishalini v'Hashem sar me'alecha v'hi arecha. So Shmuel said, why are you asking me? This is after Shmuel's been conjured up. And if you remember, and we're going to repeat it again today, the woman knew that Shaul was the king because when Shmuel came out of the ground, whatever that means, it was head first as opposed to feet first, and that's how you come up to greet a king. So we're going to review that also. But okay, and so this is the actual conversation between Shmuel and Shaul. So Shmuel says, why do you ask me? Hashem has turned away from you and is with your enemy. Yitzayin v'yas Hashem lo ka'asher diber v'yadi v'yikra Hashem et ha'mamlacha miyadecha v'yitzna l'reyacha David. As you did not listen to the voice of Hashem and and Hashem tore the kingdom from your hand and he gave it to your friend, David. And if you remember, that was Shmuel's prophecy to Shaul after the Amalek incident when he didn't kill everyone he was supposed to, and he's repeating, and he also tore his cloak there. So where all this imagery of post-Amalek is being brought forth in these words. Kasher lo shamatz v'kol Hashem v'lo asita charon apo ba'amalek al kein dvar hazeh asalecha Hashem hayom hazeh. So just as you didn't listen to the voice of Hashem and you didn't do execute his fierceness with Amalek, therefore this thing is done to you by Hashem on this day that he's not speaking to you. Yotet v'yitain Hashem gam et Yisrael imcha biyat plishtim, and Hashem is also placing Israel, your nation, into the hands of the plishtim. Umachar atav v'necha imi, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me, and that could very well mean you're going to die tomorrow. Gam et machane Yisrael yitain Hashem biyat plishtim, and he's also going to place the camp of Israel into the hands of the plishtim. Kaf v'yemeher Shaul v'yipol melo komato arza. And Shaul hurried, and he fell the full of his height. You remember, he's very tall, to the ground. Vayira me'od mitivrei Shmuel, and he was very afraid from the words of Shmuel. Gam ko lo haya lo bo, ki lo achalechem kol hayom v'kol halayla. Gam koach, sorry. And he also didn't have any strength because he hadn't eaten all day. Okay, and then we read the rest of it, where the woman then goes, and she forces him to eat, and we see this very different side of the necromancer woman, and we're kind of left in this gray state of who's good and who's bad and who's breaking the law and who's not. And Rav Bazak actually has a whole chart comparing the woman with Avraham Avinu with the language. So let's read it, even though we read it already, just to refamiliarize myself. Vatavo Yishal Shaul, and the woman came to Shaul, Vatera ki nifhal ma'od, and she saw that he was very terror-stricken, it says, Vatomer elav, and she said to him, Hine shama shivchatcha v'kolecha v'asim nafshi v'chapi v'ashma et dvarecha asher dibarti elai. So listen to your handmaiden, listen to your voice, and I placed my soul in your hand. And I listened to your words that you spoke to me. Kafbet v'ata shmana gamata b'kol shivchatecha. Now you must listen to my voice, the voice of your handmaid. V'asima lefanecha pat lachem, and I'm going to place bread before you. V'echol, and you eat it. V'hi b'cha koach, and you'll have strength in you, ki teilech baderach, and then you'll go on your way.
This is the necromancer who's referring to herself as the handmaid?
As your maidservant.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I should say maidservant, sorry. Your servant, because he's the king. Kaf gemal v'yema'ein, and he refused. V'yomer lo ochal v'yifritzuvo, and he said, I won't eat, and then she really pressured him. So his servants pressured him, and also the woman pressured him, and he listened to their voices, and he got up from the ground and he sat on the couch. She happened to have a fattened calf in the house, and she hurried, that reminds us of Abraham, and she slaughtered it. So she took flour and she kneaded it. Abraham commands Sarah to go get flour and knead the dough. And they made matzot. And we learn in the Abraham and Sarah incident, they make ugot. But later with Lot, which is basically the same day, they go and Lot makes matzot for them. So it's very similar language. And that's where Rashi tells us that, according to the Midrash, that it was actually Pesach then. V'tagesh lifnei Shaul v'lifnei avadav v'yochelu, and she presented it before Shaul and before his servants, and they ate. V'yakumo v'yachlu b'layla hahu, and they got up and they went on that night. Okay, so the first thing we're going to look up is the rabbinic perspective of how this happened or didn't happen. Okay, and we're going to see lots of different opinions all the way through. So here is the rabbinic opinion. Amarle hahu mina le Rabbi Abahu. So a certain apostate said to Rabbi Abahu, it's interesting, in different texts I saw nochri, like a non-Jew, different words for a non-Jew. There's a lot of censorship with this type of word in particular whenever the Talmud refers to non-Jews. So you'll find different words used for non-Jews based on who was censoring it at the time. Okay, so Amritu nishmatan shel tzadikim gnuzot tachat kisei hakavod. So you say that the souls of the tzadikim are stored beneath the crown of glory. Uvat maya hecha aske l'shmuel benegida. So if this is so, how did the uvat maya, is the eshet balat ov, this woman necromancer, how did she raise up Shmuel using necromancy? Amar le, so Rav Abahu responds to this apostate who's trying to catch him in some hypocrisy of Judaism. Hatam betoch 12 chodesh haba. When the necromancer conjured up Shmuel, it was within 12 months of Shmuel's death. If you remember, we're told in this parak of Shmuel's passing, so it's right next to it. Ditanya, as we learned in Breita, kol 12 chodesh gufo kayam v'nishmato ola v'yoredet. So for the entire 12 months after a person dies, his body is still in existence. He hasn't been decayed, I think, and his soul is going up and going down. So there's this fluttering of the soul between worlds. Le'achar 12 chodesh haguf batel, after 12 months, the body is, I guess, canceled, ceases to exist, it says. V'nishmato ola v'shuv eno yoredet. And the soul completely goes up and never comes down again. Okay, so based on this Gemara, we have some sort of access to the dead within the first 12 months of their dying. And it seems, according to this Gemara, that the Eshet Balatov, the necromancer, really performed this feat of conjuring up the dead. Right? Okay. So I just included some Rashi's, this Aramaic word for the necromancer, Uvat Tmaya. So he explains that Tmaya in Aramaic is our bones. And if you remember, this was one of the ways that they would conjure up the dead, was through bones. And Negida, he just translates that that's of this way of conjuring up. This is the word for necromancy. Okay, so now if you see the Radak is very long here. So Radak around a little after Rashi. And then we have the Alshich, who's, I think, 16th century Tzfat, and then the Malbim, who's 19th century. If you look at the Malbim, it's the bottom of page 3 to page 4. And then also on page 5 is Rabbeinu Bachaya, who is also medieval, but later. He's considered sometimes a super commentary in the Ramban. So all of these commentaries come and they give multiple explanations. Sometimes they repeat and sometimes they add something new. So I included all of them. So we'll go through and we'll skip over when it's a repeat. But it's very interesting. And I think just by virtue of the length of their commentaries and the breadth of their commentaries, you can see that the whole thing is really disturbing on a lot of different levels. A, that we have the notion that necromancy is an actual thing that exists, and that if necromancy exists, then how could the soul of Shmuel, who's like a tzaddik and on such a high level, be sort of subject to this magical occult power? That's like a real issue, right? I mean, once you voice the question, you realize it's like, yeah, what is this black magic power having hold over people like Shmuel HaNavi? But on the other hand, we just read in the Gemara that there's a real belief that that's what actually happened. So the later rabbis, the Rishonim and the Achronim, sort of have to reconcile, how can it be that the rabbis believe this actually happened when in their lifetimes, and even in our lifetimes, we see that all of these things are usually hoaxes, and they're, you know, like, not actual things. Although I did have an Uber driver, he gave me his card. He's traveled the world as a palm reader and a hair reader. And he, like, entertains that the reason why he's traveled the world is he's entertained at embassies all around the world, like for parties and things. And then, of course, when I was asking him questions about his background, of course, he's actually Jewish. His mother's Jewish. But it was so interesting. He's like a, he told us he was like a 9th generation palm reader. So, from the Irish side of his family. Okay, so anyway, so we see that these things, it's so weird, the prevalence of palm readers or fortune tellers that have their shingles out, like even in our neighborhood. Like if you drive down Montgomery or Lancaster, have you noticed this?
Oh, actually, yes, we're yeah.
Right. It's like a very bizarre phenomena, the number of times that I notice it.
And there are people who actually go to them?
I mean, they're paying their rent, I assume.
Yeah. Especially in uncertain times, people want something to believe. You know,
yeah. Okay, so let's look at the Radak first, since he's the earliest of all of them. And the Radak who Rav Bazak in his Shir on VBM quotes, so I was able to get some of it translated. Not all of it, though. Okay, so the Radak also, interestingly enough, addresses this issue at the end of his commentary. I just realized I don't have the pasuk number, but if you see his first Dibur HaMatzcha Vatofehu Matzot, that was our last pasuk that they made matzah, right? So he then after, so if you look at the third line where it says Ve'ani. So it's right above where I bolded Razal, that line above. Vani ro'e l'faresh hine ma'aseh ha'ov l'fi ma'asha nimtza katuv. So at the end of the entire chapter, he devotes, and you see how much space it is. He says, and I see now to explain here the whole action of the necromancer according to what's found in the writings. Okay? It's just interesting how he chooses to address it after, which is actually what Rav Bazak did too. He explained the whole parak, and that's where he included the comparison to Avram Avinu, and then at the end he has an appendix addressing this. Okay, Amru Razal, Bal Ov Zeh Hamedaber Bibein HaPrakim Umibein Atile Yadav Yiduni. Oh, yes, Atile Yadav. Okay, so he's explaining that the Bal Ov is the one who speaks from the armpit one. V'yidoni Zeh HaMeniach Etzem Chaya Shama Yadua Bepiv Umidabrim Devarim HaAtidim. So the Yidoni, these are these two words, if you remember from Vayikra, that are mentioned, that are Asur. He's the one who places the bone of an animal. And then he speaks and tells what would happen in the future. And Uperush Mibein HaPrakim. So what does it mean, between the Prakim? Shemashmia Kol Namuch Mibein Pirkei Evarav. That he makes sound a very deep voice from between his limbs, umitachat shichyav, and from under his armpit, al yedei ma'asim she'oseh shemakish bizrotav, by way of things that he does and by hitting his arms. Okay, so it's this whole thing that he does that then causes this deep voice to be heard from there. V'yesh amrim af maktir ketoret l'shad. There are others who add to this that say he would even burn incense to demons. V'hashad hu ho'ona, and the demon is the one who would answer. V'hamedaber v'amru od bal ov echad hamale b'schoro v'echad hanishal b'galgolet. So he's just explaining all the different ways that they can appear. And then he also explains what we did last week, that I'll just say outside, that in this whole process, the one who conjures, the necromancer, can see but not hear. And the one who asked for the conjuring can hear but not see. And if you're not associated with either one, then you can't hear or see. Okay. So that's what the rabbis explained. And then he goes on. You'll see it's bolded. I started a new paragraph. I formatted it so that it would be easier. V'harav ha-chacham ha-gadol Rambam. So this is Maimonides Zal. Peresh b'mase ov b'hakashat rotav. So this is this hitting of the arms when you do the necromancy. She'amar she'ochez sharbit shel hadas. This image will look familiar. So he holds a scepter of hadas. What's hadas? Myrtle, from the lulav and etrog, right? Biado, in his hand, umani phone, he waves it. Vehu medaber bila'at b'dvarim yedo'im etzlam. And he speaks slowly things that are known by them. Acharei asher hiktir ketoret, and he burns incense. Yadua etzlam, that's known to them. Ad sheyishma ha-sho'el ki'ilu echad medaber imo. Until the one who's asking hears something as if somebody's speaking with him. Umashivo, and answers him, Alma shehu shoel b'davri mitachat la'aretz, on that which he's asking from things underneath the ground, b'kol namuch, in this deep or low voice, me'od, uki'ilu eino nikar be'ozen ela b'machshava, and it's as if he's not hearing it in his ear, but rather he's hearing it in his thought. Margishbo is feeling it. Upirish mase galgolet shalokeach galgolet hamet, and this is something to do with the skull of the dead person. And he also burns incense uminacheshba, and he conjures in it ad sheishma ki ilu kol yotze mitachat shichyav, until it seems as if a voice is coming from his armpit. Shafel ad maod, that's again very deep. Umashivo, and answers. Okay, so the Rambam's also explaining. So from these explanations, you're already getting a sense that the Radak is a little suspect and making it seem like it's something that's artificial. Okay, and then he explains the rabbis again. And then, so look at the paragraph where the word ge'onim is bolded. Ve'ara'inu machloket bein ha-ge'onim. So we see a dispute among the ge'onim b'davar hazeh, in this thing. V'kulam nishtavu ki ma'aseh ha'ov hevel v'tohu. They all agree, the ga'onim. So just to give you a chronological thing, he went from the rabbis and the Talmud, and after the Talmud is codified, then we begin the period of the ga'onim. And the most famous ga'on is Rav Sa'adya Ga'on, if you've heard of him. And that's like in the basically 700 to 900, kind of that time period. And then you begin the period of the Rishonim, and Rashi is a Rishon. And that's from like 900 till around the 1400s when the Shulchan Aruch is codified. And that begins more or less the period of the Achronim. So Rishonim are the first and Achronim are the later. And now we're in the period of the later Achronim. We've never left the Achronim period. Okay? So this is the Gaonim. So these are immediate post-Talmud rabbis. And they all agree that this whole thing of necromancy, hevel v'tohu v'divrei kazav v'hatuol. So he uses a lot of words to describe, you know what hevel is, right? It's from Ecclesiastes. How do they translate it? Hevel, hevel, kol hevel, futility. Futile,
yeah,
right?
Okay,
and tohu means like tohu v'avohu, nothingness. V'divrei kazav, and it's lies, v'hatuol, and jest. Okay, so he's basically saying it's all the Gaonim agree that there's nothing real in this. It's all a lie. Aval, but yesh mehamarim ki lo diber Shmuel im Shaul. There are those who say that Shmuel wasn't speaking with Shaul. V'chas v'shalom lo ala Shmuel mikfaro. V'chas v'shalom, Shmuel didn't rise up from his grave. V'lo diber, and didn't speak. Hi. That's okay. Aval ha'isha asta hakol b'rama utz. But the women did everything through trickery. Ki miyad hikira ki sha'ulhu, ach leharot lo ki mitzad ha'chokma hikira umatzad dvar zeh, amra lama remitani, ve'ata sha'ul. Okay, so she did all through trickery, and she immediately recognized that it was sha'ul, but it was just to show him that it was from her wisdom that she recognized him. And that she found this thing, and she said, "Why did you trick me? You are Shaul." V'derech ba'alat ov lehavi ben adam shemedaber b'toch machbo'o b'lashon namuch. Okay, so now he's describing that the way the necromancers worked is that there would be a man hiding, machbo'o, and he would speak in a deep voice or a low voice. V'kasher ba Shaul lidrosh me'ata, and when Shaul came to ask to seek this out. V'ratauto, nivhal v'yada ki lemachar yia yotze lemachma v'chol Yisrael hayu b'pachad gadol v'yada ma she'asa Shaul she'ara kohanei Hashem. So now she's explaining all the things that the man hiding would have said in this whole conversation between Shaul and Shmuel. That, oh, you're going to war tomorrow. So all of Israel knows that the Plishtim are gathered and they're going to war tomorrow. And everybody knows that Shaul failed in this Amalek incident. These are all known things that any person who has his mind set on tricking somebody else could have totally brought forth to speak in this way. Okay? Does that make sense? So just like we would imagine a modern day fake necromancer working. So, and he knew that he killed all the Kohanim, right? That was well known. So they were able to say all these things, all the things that are mentioned in the Parsha. Umash amar, vayomer Shmuel el Shaul, al machshavet Shaul, ki haya choshev, ki Shmuel haya medaber alav. And when, and the whole thing is because Shaul really thought that Shmuel was speaking to him. Umash amar, velo asita charona po ba'amalek, yadua haya dabar zeh. Okay, so he's just going on and explaining that everything that we have in our text, that we have Shmuel saying to Shaul, is really the conjurer's trickery with things that were well known in the world. And everyone even knew that David was already anointed and on the way to taking over. Okay, so actually I could have read that in English, because that was all the words of Rav Shmuel ben Chafni Hagaon, who, if you're interested, I put a link who he was. So if you go to page 4. So he died in 1034, and he was a Gaon of Sura. So if you've heard of Sura and Pumbadita, they were the two centers for learning in those days. And he was actually one of the last ones.
Where were they?
In Babylon, modern day Iraq. And he was kind of the last of this era of the greatness of Sura and Pombedita. Okay, so let's just read that in English, just because it's there and it'll be clear. Some say that Shmuel did not speak with Shaul, and that, God forbid, Shmuel did not rise from his grave and speak. Rather, the woman did it all by way of deception. Here she immediately recognized that he was Shaul, but to show him that it was owing to her wisdom that he recognized him and discovered the truth, she said, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Shaul." It is the way of mediums to bring a person who speaks in a low voice from a concealed place. When Shaul came to inquire of her, and she saw that he was frightened, and she knew that tomorrow he was going out to war, and all of Israel were overcome by great fear, and she knew what Shaul did when he killed God's priests, she put the words stated in the story into the speaker's mouth. And that's what it says, and Shmuel said to Shaul, "This is what Shaul thought, for he thought that it was Shmuel who was talking to him." And that which it says, "And did not execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek," this was well known, for from that time Shmuel had told him that God rejected him from being king. And that which it says, "To your neighbor, even to David," it was well known to all of Israel that David had been anointed king. And that which it says, "And tomorrow shall you and your sons be with me," he said this based on logical reasoning. Okay, so that is one opinion of the Gaonim, that it was just all complete fake trickery. Okay, but now we have Rav Saadia and Rav Hai Gaon, who are two other Gaonim from the same period. So this is the Machloket, the debate that he mentioned before. So they say, Amru ki ametz, hu ki rachok, hu shetede ha'isha atidot, v'chein shetiyahi atamet, shetichayahi atamet, v'chokmat ha'ov, ach habore yitbarach hechaya et shmo. Okay, so they agree with the other opinion that this woman could not have known, that this woman could not have been able to actually execute this act of necromancy. But they argue that, no, not all of these things were so well known on an intimate level that she could have spoken this out, but rather Hashem caused it to happen. That the necromancer was all set up to do this deceptive thing, but really Hashem took over at that time and caused a miracle to happen and conjured up Shmuel. Okay, so now we have a question, though. And this is the other translation. If Hashem went to this length to make it appear as if the necromancy were effective, we know that Shaul had tried all other sorts of legitimate ways of conjuring up Shmuel through the Urim and Tumim, through the Nevuot, through the dreamers, right? He tried all these. So why would Hashem have caused it all to happen through this illegitimate means? Okay? So let's just read the translation. One must ask, according to these Gaonim, if Hashem, this is a Radak, if God resurrected Shmuel in order to inform Shaul what would happen to him in the future, why did he tell him not by way of dreams of the Urim or the prophets, but by way of the woman who was a medium? And furthermore, how would it have escaped Shaul, who was a sage and a king and had wise men with him, if the medium worked with another person speaking from a concealed place? And who would say that he would err in this matter? This cannot be accepted by reason. Okay, so the Radak seems to lean towards the completely deceptive explanation. He brings in the rabbinic explanation. He doesn't like the explanation of Rav Saadia and Rav Hai Gaon, that it was Hashem doing it, because it doesn't make any sense. So it was either complete deception based on known entities in the world at that time, or, as the rabbis say, it was actually some kind of necromancy. Okay, so now the Alshich. I don't know if I'll have time for all of them. Okay, I like the Alshich. So, v'hine lavo el ha'inyan ne'ira ha'arat kol ro'eh ha'shemesh. Okay, so he also is, just like the Radak took the time to explain it in a whole paragraph, so too the Alshich is telling us he's going to take the time to explain this phenomena. Be'omram me'ayin v'la'ayin haya koach l'balad ov l'imshol b'shmo. So he asks the question in a slightly different way, as I mentioned before. He's the one who says, from where and to where did this necromancer have the strength to rule over Shmuel? Asher nafsho gvoha gvoha, that his soul is so elevated, la'atol b'kashveha, that she in her magic would be able to bring him up. V'rabu v'zeh ha'deot l'achronim panim There are many different opinions from all different aspects and sides. Asheri Nagdam HaMikra, that how to explain this. Vigam LeRazal Ein Lahem Bahem Chafetz. And also, according to the rabbis, they also didn't know. Ve'anu Ein Lanu Lazuz MiDivreihem. But we cannot move from the words of the rabbis that explained that it actually happened. Ki bahem chaye ruchenu umipiham anu chayim. Because from them, our spirit lives, and from their words, we live. So he, unlike the Radak, is not will, or the Gaonim, I should say, is not willing to go against the words of the rabbis. Vihine begemara, and it's the Gemara that I said to you before about how an apostate, and you can see sha'ale hahu nochra. So in our text of the Gemara, it said amina, which is an apostate, and here it says nochra, so another word for a non-Jew, to Rabbi Abahu, and he said, how could it be that the soul was able to be conjured if you say that the soul of the tzaddikim are all put away under the throne of God? And he explains to her that it's if it's within the 12 months, and he says because within the 12 months the soul is still going back and forth. And now it's five lines from the bottom in the middle. V'hen hem hadvrim asher achshava kivun hakatuv. So the Alshik is saying he agrees with the rabbinic explanation. V'nachush shaktu bazeh kol asher hukshal lanu ba. And this should put to rest anybody who gave a difficulty to it. V'hu ki term yagid inyan aliyat shmuel yidei habalat ov asher alken yitchametz levav enosh. Because before it tells us the whole matter of bringing up Shmuel's soul by way of the necromancer, which causes the heart of people to become sour. His language is really beautiful. I can't do it justice in my translation. Hikdim refuato. The medicine for this was already given to us. So this whole notion of this necromancer having power over Shmuel's soul and being able to bring him up, which causes us all this distress, the medicine was already given when it told us in the pasuk, in this parak, that Shmuel had died. Lomar hen emet ki v'Shmuel meitz kvar kasher sofer lamala. It was already written to us before that Shmuel died. V'yisbedu lo kol Yisrael v'yikberu kvar v'Ramah. And he'd been eulogized and he'd already been buried in Ramah. Ach uv'iro hanizkeret haya adayin. And he was still in the city. Ki lo kala mishum gufo v'lo alta misham nishmato liyot bilti yoredet od. He hadn't yet gone up to his final resting place, his soul, and therefore he was still able to, it was still, his presence was still on earth. Ki odena sham olevi yoredet. He was still going up and down. Ki toch shnato haya. Because it was within the year. So the Alshich is, even though it's distasteful for us to talk about Shmuel being conjured up this way, he's saying the text is telling us his soul is still around. It wasn't such a power that the necromancer had over Shmuel because his soul was available. Okay?
So the Malachim, like Yaakov saw going up and down, they recently died dead people?
I don't know. I think Malachim are completely different entities.
Oh.
Like created. Yeah, created on the second day with the Rekia, according to like more Kabbalistic stuff. I don't know. Okay, so now Malvim. And it's some repeat, but some new stuff, so we'll skip whatever's repetition. So first he asks his questions. Kol anshe lev hitpalu ech tishlot isha v'kashpeha al nefesh hanavi. So all people's hearts were in wonderment, astoundment, how this woman with her magic could possibly have power over the soul of the prophet to bring him down. Mitzrur hachayim. Tzrur hachayim, it's actually from Shmuel. It's a way of saying that his soul is bound up with God by way of magic. Viladat lehagid atidot ayde hachracha kishuf. And how could she then know to say the future by way of this force magic? Okay, so he first cites the opinion of Rav Shmuel ben Chafni, who's the Gaon that the Radak said. So that it was just all fakery and trickery. Turn the page to 4. And then he mentions the Ralbag, Shaya mipu'ulat koach hadimyon, that this was all the strength of his imagination. And it wasn't real. And it was just, I guess, I don't know if he's actually saying this, but Shaul was so desperate that he himself conjured up in his imagination this whole thing. He believed it. And then he mentions Rav Hai Gaon and Rav Sadia Gaon, that Hashem is really the one who did it. But then the Malbim asked the same question, if this was so, why didn't he answer him, Be'orim Uven Nevi'im, with the prophets or the Orim Batumim? And then he talks about the Mahari, which is, I gave you from the Israeli Wikipedia site, Rav Yisrael Iserlin, who wrote the halachic work, the Trumat HaDeshen, if you've heard of that. He was a Rishon. And he says, Sheshad hitlavesh begufo shel Shmuel. He says, a demon dressed himself in the body of Shmuel. V'hu asher karahu akturim b'shem Shmuel mitzad gufo. And they only called him Shmuel by way of how he appeared. So he is acknowledging black magic, but not the use of black magic over Shmuel himself. He's saying that she was able to conjure up these demons that then could dress like Shmuel. And then he quotes the Akedat Yitzchak, who I think was around the time of the Inquisition, Spanish Inquisition. Vayomer bal Akedat Yitzchak, you see where it is? Shehi hitchila bepula. She started in her necromancy, her actions. Vayidei kach itorer Shmuel me'atzmo. And by way of her starting this process, Shmuel awakened himself. He decided that it was time to make an appearance, only because he wanted to, not because he was forced by her magic. Okay, which is a nice explanation. But then he says, "Ulam lama lanu hatchukim atumim ela? Why do we have to go to these great forced lengths of explaining this? Hello, Chazal. Be'agadatem sipru ma'asei ov shaya noheg adayin bimei chachmei ha-mishnah ve'atamad. Our rabbis in their Agadita have told us exactly what happened because it was still in use during the days of the Mishnah and the Talmud. And then he goes on to explain the rabbinic explanation that it actually could have happened. And I think we'll read it. Ve'he'idu shaya bekocham lahalot hanefashot mekivrei hamamash, and that there were people who actually had this power to bring souls out of their graves, actually. Ve'amru shamaalei ro'eihu v'anisha, and then he explains how who sees it and who hears it and who doesn't. And how then he explains how a regular person would have come out feet first, but the king came out head first. And this is all because this type of craft was known, and it was actually done in their days, and they knew the whole process. But they still are questioning how she could have, her magic could have ruled over the soul of a Navi. Kvar biati b'drosh miuchad. So he explained that somewhere else. I couldn't find where he explained it. But here he goes on to explain it a little bit, and this gets a little Kabbalistic, but it's interesting. Ki hanishama hane'atzelet milamala, hi tistalek techef b'motadam. V'tashuv el ha'elokim asher nitna. So there's this notion that we have two souls. One soul is an actual piece of God. And that aspect of our soul, immediately upon death, goes straight back to God. Okay? Ulam hanefesh ha'hilyanit. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that way. But we have a different part of our soul, which is that part that allows us to breathe and live, that's very much connected and tied up with our body, hamitave im hagvia, that exists with the corpse, the body, hi lo tistalek ad klot hagvia bekever achar yud bet chodesh. So this is the piece that isn't removed until the corpse decomposes after 12 months. Okay? So we have this soul, this spiritual aspect of us that's not an actual part of God, and it's our life force, sort of connected. In the way the Tanya describes it, and it's not so nice to say, but I'm just going to say it by way of helping us understand what he's saying, is that Jews have this godly soul, and everyone else and anything else that's living have this animating soul, what allows us to live and breathe in the world. But for the Tanya, only Jews have this piece of the godly soul. Okay, so it's nefesh, in the words of the Tanya, it's nefesh Eloki, the godly soul, versus nefesh behemi, the animal soul, which is what allows us to live. And within us is this battle, sort of, at all times, between our godly soul and our animal soul. Okay, so it's this animal soul that exists within us for 12 months, as it's written in the Gemara that I showed you. And then he goes on to quote the Gemara. Ki yesh la kesher atzmi im hagvia, because it has a real connection with the body. V'chol od shelo nase ba melechet ha'alkimia, and anybody who hasn't done the work of the alchemy, right? Alchemia, the alchemist, right? Trying to turn, what do they try? What's they're trying to turn things into gold, right? Different things. Okay, ayde hatziruf ve'hazikuch shiavale haguf. So you can take apart the body in all these different ways. And therefore, the necromancer can have power over this aspect of anybody's soul. Even if you're the highest, greatest tzaddik like Shmuel, you still have this animalistic soul inside of you that a necromancer could then have power over. But don't worry, his godly soul went immediately back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the necromancer has no power over that. And she also has the power to tell the future by way of some magical action. But with all this, the actual godly soul of Shmuel, the higher soul, in its honor is with Hashem, Beratot HaChaim, in the land of the living, which is a euphemism for the land of the dead. Ki rak haruach shehu davuk adayim im hagvuya. The only spirit that still manifests itself here on earth is that which is tied up with the body. And that's what v'ha'ov shalit baruach lichlo et ruach ayde hakesem. And the necromancer can have power over this spirit to imprison it by way of magic. And that's why she cried out when she saw Shmuel, because he came out head first. And that's why she said, "You've deceived me." Okay. I think I will stop there. And I still haven't done the end of the Midrash. And I'm going to tie all this, I think I'm going to tie the rest of the sources into when Shaul actually dies. Okay, I just want to do one more thing. The very last thing. Oh, I didn't do it very in Bacha. Okay, it's okay. So let's just do the very last source to sort of tie up this chapter. Vilama Rimitani. So when the necromancer said, "Why have you deceived me?" Bet b'mesora. There's two times that this question, "Why have you deceived me?" is used. I mentioned it before that Yaakov says it to Lavan when he wakes up and it's Leah. Bet mesora din ve'idach. So there's this one and the other one. So here, the Iglad Dekala, who's the Bnei Yisachar, the Hasidish Rebbe, is commenting on when Yaakov says it to Lavan, and he mentions the other one is ours in Shmuel Aleph. Be'eshet Ba'alat Ov, with the necromancer. Yadua mechachmei ha'emet mizohar. So we know from Kabbalists and the Zohar. De'al kein haita snu'a Leah. That it was because of this that Leah was the hated wife. Ki kodem shenikra Yisrael, lo hisig adayin draga delea begavhei meromim. Because before Yaakov's name was changed to Yisrael, there had been no concept of this high level of Leah that goes into the highest heights. Ki madregata lamala mamidat rosh. Because the level of Leah is higher than the head. Ad shenikra shmo Yisrael, until his name was called Yisrael, which you can do a, oh, what's it called when you mix up the letters and you make another word?
Anagram.
You can do an anagram of Yisrael, of Li Rosh, to me is the head. So once he became Yisrael, then he was able to grasp concepts higher than the Rosh, than the head. V'hine be'eshet balad ov amru razal. And the rabbis say about the necromancer, shebeze yada shehu sha'ul. That's how she knew that it was Sha'ul. Liyot she'ole Shmuel lamala derech roshol lichvod Sha'ul. Because Shmuel came out head first in order to honor Sha'ul. U'bezet hitbonin shehu davar hanilmad b'mesora v'havein. And this you should meditate on, that this is a teaching in the Masorah, and understand it. Okay, so I don't understand it at all. But I just thought it was an interesting concept and a way to understand or not understand the connection between the deception of Yaakov, of Lavan to Yaakov, and Sha'ul to the necromancer. So, sorry, it doesn't make any sense to me either, but I just wanted to put it out there and bring it in. Okay.